And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is October 17, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to send all our beloved brothers and sisters of the Jewish faith and Happy Sukkot, the celebration of the Tabernacle, one of the three major holidays of the Jewish faith. That time that when all the Jewish people were gathered together to Mount Moriah, where the temple, on Temple Mount, where the temple, the Holy Temple was existing then. And the celebration was happening three times a year. And it's amazing because they would bring back grace to God and thank before, you know, all the people that pray together. And it was an awesome understanding of the Jewish faith. And it's mentioned in the Bible and the Torah, all the books of Moses on many occasions. That's why it was so weird to get the announcement of UNESCO, the you know, the cultural body of the United Nations this week, that last week, that stated that Temple Mount does have no connection to the Jewish faith, only to the Muslim. So I don't know if they want to describe the Bible again or they want to change the Jewish faith again, because three times we go to the Temple Mount site to see, you know, to come before God, and now they want to change it. You see, sometimes people have to back up and hold themselves and decide what we are really doing. What in the world are we all doing together? Are we denying each other the rightful pleasure and honor to serve one belief in God? You know, we have a different occasion every so often to see people that...
King Bhumibol reigned for so long, he was the preeminent symbol of his country. Yet he remained an enigma. A cultured, outwardly modern monarch with few legal powers, but with the status of a semi-divine feudal ruler. Throughout his reign, he enjoyed lavish public affection. Yet a true assessment of his popularity was never possible because of the severe laws banning any negative comment about the royal family. He ascended the throne in 1946 after the still unexplained shooting death of his brother. The Thai monarchy was weak back then, its status diminished. The young king set about rebuilding its prestige. King Bhumibol presented himself as a caring monarch, interested in rural development. A softer side to the military dictatorships that ran Thailand for much of his reign. He became an indispensable figure of national unity, using his revered status to reach out to remote areas during the communist insurgency of the Cold War. He gained a reputation as a mediator during periods of political upheaval. It was after that that Thailand enjoyed its longest period of democratic rule. However, the rise of this man, Thaksin Shinawat, a tycoon turned politician, proved to be a watershed. Through populist policies and slick marketing, he gained unprecedented electoral power. But the brash and ambitious Mr. Thaksin was too much for the conservative establishment that surrounded the king. King Bhumibol himself was clearly uncomfortable with him. He was ousted in a military coup in 2006. Like previous coups, it was quickly endorsed by the palace. Pro-Thaksin governments that were elected after the coup were also forced from office, angering his supporters and tarnishing the monarchy's once untouchable reputation. In later life, King Bhumibol became more remote. He was often hospitalized for his various ailments. He remained a near sacred father figure for many Thais, but one whose ability to influence events had faded. His legacy is a highly personalized monarchy that will struggle to redefine itself now that he's gone.
and all our friends in Thailand. Our deepest condolences and deep respect to the Honorable King that passed. And we honor his memory and we embrace our friends in Thailand. And all around the world, they need to know what kind of a king that took all the time to serve his nation, his people, with a lot of struggle, but he did it with much love. So that's why they are missing a great leader. But it's, you know, in all cases, that's life. I guess the circle of life needs to come, and I hope that they have a great king coming afterwards. All right, so we are back. I'm sorry for the interruption before, but this is a part of the internet. This is a part of life in the new age. This is the part that we all trying to struggle while we have so much conflict in the Middle East and elsewhere. I know that we need to give thanks to God this holiday season, and we want to give God to and welcome those children, those little girls that were kidnapped with Boko Haram in Africa when, you know, they were taken. There are a lot of little girls still in captivity. There are hundreds of kids that disperse and nobody's talking about. And I want to pray to God that they'll bring it back, because, you know, there is a lot of worthy things that the world can give back instead of those kids. We need those life back to the circle of humanity, and stop kidnapping and using children as your weapon. Anyway, let's see if we can find that segment on our list. If not, let's play a song.
What's it called, please?
Boko Haram, the, you know, the girls are back home. But let's listen to songs and we'll be back. Wow, I love those when God intervene when there is so much going on, and I know that the pressure is cooking. Okay, we talk about those girls that were kidnapped for 2 years already, and some of them made it home. Let's listen to that.
We understand these are very new developments. The girls are still en route to Maiduguri, which is the state capital of Borno State, to be received there by the state governor and then transferred to the custody of the Directorate of Social Services, from which point then it'll begin the massive debriefing process, the psychological support, the meetings with their families. But it is just extraordinarily good news for the families, finally, after over 2.5 years. And bearing in mind, there are still around 200 girls still out there, still in Boko Haram custody. The fact that the International Committee of the Red Cross was able to do this, and the government is claiming for the time being that they were able to do this without giving in to any of the Boko Haram demands, which were a prisoner swap or a ransom, I think for the families, this is finally some real hope.
Why might have Boko Haram have agreed to do this if there wasn't anything in the deal for them, from what we can tell?
That is, of course, the question, and that's what we're trying to get some kind of sense of from the government. Why now? We know that Boko Haram are in disarray. We know that they're divided. We know very much that their leadership feels incredibly beleaguered. So why hand over 21 of your most valuable assets right now? That's what we're going to keep digging into, Matt.
And what do we know about the remaining girls? How many are there? And
that, unfortunately, is pretty opaque, because one of the girls, up until this point, the only girl who had managed to escape Boko Haram custody since they were spirited off into the Sambisa forest, had said that some of the girls had died during the movement, during the government besiegement of the Sambisa forest area. So it's very difficult to get numbers, but that's what we're going to be looking to hear from those 21 girls.
All right. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Come on, come on, guys. It's holiday and we need to understand that it's a moment of festivity here in the Jewish land. We have a lot to be thankful and we want to help. We want to become, you know, whatever God wanted us to be the light upon nation. You know, there's so much happening in the Middle East. They are in the midst of war. There are children who need assistance. There are people that are dispersed because of time of war. And we are here, you know, hoping to help, to send maybe supply, maybe, you know, from Israel. I don't know if they accept that, but it doesn't matter. We are here. And the United Nations need to use the base of the surrounding area and not create some kind of, you know, intrigues in between those people. We have enough of war. Just imagine, this morning we get up, you guys, you know, in America it's morning, and we all for the last few hours been wondering what happened to the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, because for some reason, is MII, they are talking, the MIA, I'm sorry, they are talking about the fact that encrypted signal were sent from his computer, meaning that he's on a very bad condition or something is going on. And we just don't know. We just don't know because he's in the embassy of Ecuador in London. And some reporter that tried to connect them got the message, we cannot talk to you guys. So we are not sure what's happening there. So, but Pamela Anderson seems to visit him yesterday. So I don't know if she gave him food or she saw him, if it's okay. Anyway, I just wanted to mention this in all the midst of other news that we have. And, you know, we have to go back to the very first beginning that I started with the UNESCO information. Let's listen to that.
UNESCO has intervened in the long-running Israeli-Arab conflict over Jerusalem's holy sites of the Temple Mount and the Western Wall. It passed a resolution for the sites to be referred to only by their Arabic names, Haram es-Sharif and the Burak Wall, thereby ignoring any Jewish connection. The Temple Mount is considered a religious site by Jews, Muslims, and Christians. Since the 12th century, it's been managed by an Islamic religious trust which bans non-Muslim prayers on the site. Jews are permitted to pray nearby at the Western Wall, also known as the Wailing Wall. Israeli security forces, however, control access to the Temple Mount, frequently leading to confrontations with Palestinian protesters. And we discussed the UNESCO resolution with journalist Max Blumenthal.
UNESCO resolution recognizes that the Temple Mount is holy to all three religions, but it also seeks to maintain a status quo that has prevailed and kept the peace. And that is why this resolution should be adopted. And we've seen Israel, which UNESCO recognizes correctly as the occupying power, violate the status quo and seek to disrupt the status quo through mock archaeology searches seeking to establish a Jewish presence which could lead to the upending of the status quo, and through invasions, either armed invasions or invasions by far right-wing settler extremists. Not only that, last summer, Israeli border policemen fired percussion grenades and smoke bombs into one of the mosques at the Al-Aqsa compound, starting fires inside the mosque. Religious figures, imams inside the compound, have been attacked and arrested.
Israel was quick to respond. Its foreign ministry replied with this tweet saying that UNESCO is effectively rewriting the Bible. And Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu added a bit of fuel to the flames.
To say that Israel has no connection to the Temple Mount and the Western Wall is like saying China has no connection to the Great Wall, and that Egypt has no connection to the pyramids.
Arabic name not even knowing that in the Arabic name, they actually mentioned the fact that it was a holy temple there. Okay, you go and check it. But I want to make a point of reference as far as we're talking about legislations, about talking about proposal and entity and propriety. We need to also use the fact. Now, let's use the fact. The committee of in the 25th session of Helsinki in 2001 endorsed the recommendation of the 25th session of the Bureau in Paris in 2001 to postpone further consideration of this nomination proposal until agreement of the status of the city of Jerusalem with the international law is reached and until party concerns submit a joint nomination. It means that it should be noted that UNESCO General Conference and its resolution 32/90 affirmed that nothing in the present decision, which aimed to safeguarding cultural heritage of the city, will be affect other UN resolution. It means that there is on the book already a resolution stating that until final negotiation is reached, there is no other interference. And now UNESCO is slashing that and forgetting that. Oh, well, sometimes there are new people that don't know what they're talking about coming to play. And that's what happened. I know that the chairman, the lady of UNESCO, was against it. So we want to recommend that. Anyway, let's keep on going. UNESCO has been doing not such a good job because a few years back she also mentioned that the tomb of the matriarch of the Jewish people, Rachel, is considered to be non-Jewish. It's the same thing. It's like they want to eradicate the Jewish religion from its ancestor land, and that sense, you know, whatever fact that we have on the ground, they want to eradicate. So I'm thinking that the tomb of the matriarch Rachel needs to be a part of Israel, and I know that the map that that Christopher signed it. Signed when the peace accord was reached. I know that on the land, on the map, the signed map of Christopher, they say that the matriarch tomb was not a part of the Palestinian. It was a part of the land of Israel. So I hope that somebody will be courageous enough to bring back that site to the Jewish state. Anyway, let's keep on going. We have some information about what's Secretary of State Kerry is doing. Let's listen to that.
Delegates from Iran, the U.S., Russia, Turkey, and five Arab nations, Egypt, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Jordan, met in Switzerland to discuss reviving the Syrian peace process, but talks ended after just 4 hours and without any agreement. When the conference was announced, American and French officials immediately expressed doubt that any progress would be made, causing some to accuse the West of mainly being interested in ways to prolong the conflict.
As a journalist and also as a citizen of the world, we have to say that this meeting was a deception. Their promise to take at least a small step toward resolving the major issues, re-establishing a ceasefire and delivering humanitarian aid, but we didn't achieve anything close to that, so calling it a deception is accurate.
That perception took root last month after the U.S. killed 62 Syrian soldiers via airstrikes immediately after a ceasefire had been laboriously arranged. Some progress was made. Turkey stated that the Syrian opposition must separate itself from Jabhat Fat al-Sham, also known as al-Nusra, who should leave immediately to allow the delivery of humanitarian aid. The foreign ministers of Russia and the United States did meet separately, but Washington still shows no inclination to start working with Moscow on fighting ISIL. So far, the West has appeared either unwilling or unable to separate the so-called moderate rebels from ISIL, al-Nusra, and other terrorists. Western leaders still insist on the departure of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad as a condition for even starting serious peace talks, despite Assad's democratic election, international recognition, and 5 years of conflict.
The greater part of the discussion revolved around security in the ceasefire in Syria. It is specifically focused on the main reason why the truce recently agreed by the U.S. and Russia did not hold. The reason was a dispute over whether or not separate Nusra Front and Daesh terrorist groups from other Syrian groups.
Officials promised more meetings, but the failure to even re-establish September's ceasefire makes the path to peace seem even more difficult. Without international cooperation, it appears certain that Syria will continue to suffer at the hands of terror groups. Rami Mazahiri, Press TV, Lausanne, Switzerland.
Okay, we are back. And while we're talking about the forces that are on the ground, we have forces on the ground trying to occupy Mosul in Iraq. And what we have to consider is the fact that we have operation happening right now on the ground. There are people, there are 50,000 forces, troops on the ground marching towards Mosul. And we want to pray for those soldiers. I really would love to see ISIS giving up and leaving the people of Iraq be and the people of Syria be. They need to dismantle all their posts. And I know that they're going to have a lot of force on the ground. We have the Iraqi forces, the special unit forces of Iraqi. We have the police of the Iraqi. We have American special forces. We have Brits probably. And we know that there are Turks on the ground and the Kurds. Something that can be really scary, because not all forces coordinate their efforts. So I'm praying that it will be an easy take and we keep on going to the next. And I know that the American and the Russian are having a stand up right now. But as we see everything here evolve, we need to consider the fact that we cannot keep on going like this forever. And the stand up between America and Russia is a tricky one. But at the end of the day, we need to start, the business work. And it's enough with war. And I know that Israel is out of the equation, thank God. But we have many people from Russia in the country that wants to keep relationship open after so many years that they were close with Russia. And the Americans, of course, are the best allies of Israel in the world. And there is no question. So we are here wanting everybody to get along. We've been living through war constantly and we know what it is. So we send all our best to the people on the ground in Mosul, and we hope that there will be a fast recovery for Syria and all its people. And I know that it's easy to say, but we need to start the recovery part of this world, or this part of the world. Anyway, not easy. It's so much information as being sent our way, and there are some good news. The hope is open, something incredible happened to the world, and it gave the Nobel Prize was given to Leonard Cohen, one of the best singers that we had the luxury and the honor to have in our life, to listen to grow up to have some kind of environment where, hope is more than a world, it's a music too. So let's listen to him.
Secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord.
All right, Doug Newsom, we love you. I love you. You're such a great man. You're helping me so much. It's been crazy out there today, I know, but we have to keep on going. So please forgive us while we are building our site sometimes. Anyway, guys, there is a dire warning from the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde. You know, the lady of all, she actually announced that the third of the bank is in danger of collapse. This is not kidding. You know, the fact that in zero interest rate was running so much and for so long to introduce a loan, but actually killed the profit, I guess. So the banks are suffering. And I don't know if American is ready for another bailout, but I don't think so, because in 2008, that was a great bailout. They gave the money to the bank without any recognition that they need to give a break to the mortgage, to the people on their mortgage. So they took the money, they run, and they invested it, and they bought other bank. You know, they bought each other out. They used the money, instead of helping people that were about to lose their houses, they didn't even took in consideration. They did that and they run. And now they're in trouble again, and I'm sure that American people will be smart enough not to give them the bailout, but it's going to be shaky ground. So as the big guys are fighting, you know, the economy needs to roll, and economy cannot be sustained on military. You guys have to understand that this is over. The fight cannot go on, because they're going to introduce nuclear weapon to the game, and it's going to be devastation. Remember those movies, the Hollywood? And you know, on this one, I want Disney to win as far as you know, reality follow arts or something, as they used to say. I really want to think that we have leaders that can consider calming down the situation and coming back to the work in hand and doing what they can to improve it. The bank cannot be sustained without a vibrant economy. The economy needs a resting, a very different tone of a mode of doing. We need some people to work hard. We can engage. We can do it through the internet. Yes, there is a way. We can generate a lot of common market if we put our heads together. It's not a hard task to do, but we need to get the guys back to the office to work instead of military shooting at each other. Okay, there is, I sound like a pathetic. I don't know. It's not pathetic. It's a mother. It's a sister. It's a daughter. It's a child that wants to be home safe. It's enough with those war. Did you see, guys, did you see the picture from Aleppo in Syria? There was a kid hanging out, but from a building was destroyed. I don't know what you guys are doing. The cruelty of this world is not enough for you guys. How bad you want how bad you want to have control when you want to sacrifice the world for that? This is control freak running the show, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, we mothers have a different way. You know, we have to give up our power sometimes just to make everything go peacefully. So maybe we need women in the job. But having said that, it doesn't mean that I endorse Hillary, because the latest that I got on her, you know, just one tape, one episode that tells you what this lady is all about. We have Hillary Clinton And let's listen to it.
The emails that may tie President Obama into all of this. What is the latest on that? While I remind everyone that he has always maintained publicly, Ed, that he didn't know she was keeping that private server.
That's exactly right, Sandra. And it's very interesting. In the last 5 minutes, we've gotten yet another very interesting email from the hacked emails from John Podesta's account. I'll get to that in a moment. But you're right. There's two major facts here under fire. Number one, President Obama saying he didn't really know anything about the email server. He rarely emailed with Hillary Clinton. And secondly, Hillary Clinton telling the American people again and again, she turned over all work-related email. Well, let's look at the first one, and we'll get to the second. But the first one we've gotten from John Podesta. It turns out on March 4th of 2015, he wrote to Cheryl Mills, a top Clinton aide, quote, "Think we should hold emails to and from POTUS, as in the president? That's the heart of his executive privilege. We could get them to ask for that. They may not care, but it seems like," he says, "they will." Look at the timeline. That is on March 4th. Well, what was going on then? On March 3rd, the day before that, Republican Trey Gowdy issued a subpoena demanding that Hillary Clinton preserve all of her emails and other records. Fast forward to March 20th, that same month, 2015, Trey Gowdy demanded that the server be turned over. Then I mentioned an email we just got in the last 5 minutes. Another one we found on March 22nd, 2 days after Gowdy asked for the server. There are some email exchanges about the president and Hillary Clinton meeting together at the White House. That meeting we learned about at the time, but the fact that it was happening now in this context of them deciding, do we hold some emails between them or not? And then they actually met behind closed doors. All of this very interesting, Sandra.
Wow, Ed, it sounds like we also have some sensational information regarding Clinton donors and more problems for the Clinton Foundation now.
Yeah, a leaked email showing that after Chelsea Clinton raised questions about their governance there at the foundation against the wishes of some of her father's friends, the former president Bill Clinton, a law firm known for focusing on philanthropic issues was brought in, conducted a major review in 2010 and concluded, quote, "Some interviewees reported conflicts of those raising funds or donors, some of whom may have an expectation of quid pro quo benefits in return for gifts." Mike Pence, the Republican running mate for Donald Trump, spoke out on all of this morning on Fox and Friends.
But at the time that many in the national media are chasing after these unsubstantiated allegations, it's remarkable to me they continue to literally ignore the hard evidence that's flowing out of Hillary Clinton's years as Secretary of State in the Clinton Foundation.
So you've heard from the Clinton camp. They've said it again and again. They're not going to engage on the accuracy of every one of these emails, but they believe the point is that Russia is intervening, hacking, they believe, into John Podesta's account, interfering in the U.S. election. They want to talk about that. Mike Pence and Donald Trump obviously want to talk about the substance of all this, Sandra.
All right, Ed Henry, thank you for that reporting.
Good to see you.
All right, we are.
And we are back. We were talking about the reports about Hillary Clinton emails. And there are a few also other disturbing notes that we want to mention to you. It seems like they were planning to insert people to Christian group to try to eradicate their Christian movement, I guess, activities and belief. You guys have to understand, I can relate to anything that, you know, against women. We understand it's happening. It's everyday thing. With Donald Trump is deplorable sometimes, yes. But to try to eradicate a belief from people's hearts and soul, this is the most coward act that a man or woman can do. And if the DNC does it, they don't deserve any vote. They need to go home because people have the right, and it's the First Amendment. It's not only a first, it's human right. It's the right to, in God we trust is something. Everybody has its own God. Everybody has their belief. And the fact that Hillary Clinton and her fellow citizen, whoever, decided to insert themselves, they're trying to outsmart God. This is really grand. So we'll see. You know, laugh who's left the last. And I know that many people think highly of Trey Gowdy from South Carolina. I think a lot of him. I respect him, and I know that he went like crazy you know, about the affair of Benghazi with a good justification. Now let's listen to what Trey Gowdy had to say.
We will not waver in our commitment to see that justice is done for this terrible act in Benghazi. And make no mistake, justice will be done. That was the President of the United States over a year ago. We're investigating exactly what happened, but my biggest priority now is bringing those folks to justice. That was the President of the United States over a year ago. No one has been arrested. No one has been prosecuted. No one has been brought to justice. We don't even have access to the witnesses. You and the media were good enough for my 16 years as a prosecutor not to tell me how to do my job. And so far in Congress, y'all have been good enough not to tell me how to do my job. I'm not telling you how to do your job. But I'm going to ask you some questions. And if you can't answer these questions, then I'll leave you to draw whatever conclusion you want to draw about whether or not the media has provided sufficient oversight. Can you tell me why Chris Stevens was in Benghazi the night that he was killed? Do you know? Does it bother you whether or not you know why Chris Stevens was in Benghazi? Do you know why we were the last flag flying in Benghazi after the British had left and the Red Cross had been bombed? Do you know why requests for additional security were denied? Do you know why an ambassador asking for more security days and weeks before he was murdered and those requests went unheeded? Do you know the answer to why those requests went unheeded? Do you know why no assets were deployed during the siege? And I've heard the explanation, which defies logic, frankly, that we couldn't have gotten there in time, but you know they didn't know when it was going to end. So how can you possibly cite that as an excuse? Do you know whether the president called any of our allies and said, can you help? We have men under attack. Can you answer that? Do any of you know why Susan Rice was picked? The Secretary of State did not go. She says she doesn't like Sunday talk shows. That's the only media venue she does not like. If that's true, why was Susan Rice on the five Sunday talk shows? Do you know the origin of this mythology that it was spawned as a spontaneous reaction to a video? Do you know where that started? Do you know how we got from no evidence of that to that being the official position of the administration? In conclusion, Congress is supposed to provide oversight. The voters are supposed to provide oversight. And you were supposed to provide oversight. That's why you have special liberties, and that's why you have special protections. I am not surprised that the President of the United States called this a phony scandal. I'm not surprised that Secretary Clinton asked, what difference does it make? I'm not even surprised that Jay Carney said Benghazi happened a long time ago. I'm just surprised at how many people bought it.
All right, that was Trey Gowdy. He has a very good point, and he was asking us in the media, well, in a different CNN and Fox News and all the great leaders of the news, to try to get some answers, because for some reason there wasn't. But something I want to put in, because I don't have any answer for whatever he asked, but I want to ask, what was the role of NATO in the war in Libya? Because it seems that NATO had some role to do in 2011, and there is an Odyssey operation down in Libya there. And a coalition carried a, you know, an air campaign, and there was a rebel militia on the ground. So we need to see the whole picture from a different perspective, okay? Because banging on the same story again and again, it doesn't make a difference. You know, it's like Einstein say, you cannot, you know, do the same thing expecting a different result. So let's turn the prism and look at it from a different angle and see if we can actually understand what the play was before and how Stevens, what he was doing there. Because many people were saying that they were, he was about to go get some information or some material, technical material there on the ground. There were a lot of news, and there are a lot of people who know something and they don't talk yet, and maybe we can get them to start sharing some information. We never know. The idea is to try to see the picture from a global stage, not just on individual, you know, this Hillary Clinton was not responding because she was supposed to get somebody else to do that. I don't know. The president and whoever on the ground, why they were holding short, we're not sure. It's a question. But Trey Gowdy is a great guy, and he's an honest guy. So let's listen to one of his great speeches that he made. Let's listen.
And then I ask him two questions. Which do you value more, truth or freedom? And every single person in my office said freedom. And I said, okay, which do you value more, unity or diversity? And everyone but one said diversity. Look, truth and freedom are both really important. But at some point, you and your generation have to ask yourselves, what is the benefit of the freedom to be wrong? Do you really value freedom more than truth? Do you even think there is a truth? But we are, after all, the United States of America. So what is it that unites us? So I'll go back to the verse, and I think, well, is there an answer in that verse? If my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their what? Wicked ways. Well, maybe there's a start. Sure. Can we at least agree that there is good and bad? Or is everything relative? For 16 years, I never once stood in front of a jury and tried to convince them that murder was wrong. Never once. I never tried to convince a jury that robbery was wrong, that discrimination was wrong, that mistreating children was wrong. So there is a source of unity. There is a code by which we all have agreed to live. What is the source of that code? And if you are in that group that wants a better future than the present you are experiencing, if you don't like this disunity, if you don't like this sense of angst, if you don't like what seems to be forcing you to be detached and cynical about your country and your government, then you got to do something about it. You got to figure out what you believe, and more importantly, you got to figure out why you believe it. It is never enough in politics or any other sphere of persuasion to simply tell people what you believe. You have to tell them why you believe it. Do you believe in respect for the rule of law? Let me tell you something about the law. It is the most unifying and equalizing force that we have in this country. It is the only thing that makes the richest person in this county drive the same speed limit as the poorest person. It is what makes the richest person in Virginia pay his or her taxes on precisely the same day as the poorest. So if you don't like the direction of our country, or you want a better future, what do you believe and why do you believe it? Secondarily, you can be the smartest person in the world, and if you can't communicate what you believe, you're not going to be very successful. So you do need a message, and that message better be why. Why you believe what you believe, but you also need a very effective manner or method of communication. In other words, you need to learn how to persuade. How do you persuade in life? Facts. authenticity, sincerity, credibility. You want to persuade, change people's minds to come around to your way of thinking on whatever issue it is, and I don't care about your politics. They're none of my business. You can have whatever politics you want. But I will tell you what doesn't work: insulting people. Any of you have been married for more than a week? Any of you aspire to be married at any point in life? Let me give you a piece of free advice after 25 years of marriage. Insulting people does not work if your objective is to persuade. Look, I did not vote for President Obama. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for him. But you know what? A majority of my fellow citizens did. So when I see a bumper sticker that says, don't blame me, I didn't vote for the idiot, do you think that's persuasive? Do you think anybody that voted for President Obama is going to be persuaded, yeah, maybe I possibly made a mistake because this person called me an idiot? Life doesn't work that way. You know what happens when you're insulted? You become even more dogmatic in holding your incorrect belief than you were before you were insulted. So if your goal is to persuade, you shouldn't be insulting people. Let me tell you what else doesn't work. Hypocrisy. Telling other people how to live their lives, but you live your life a different way. You want to persuade people? Hypocrisy doesn't work. Insults don't work. What does work? A relationship. The person has to know that you care about them. They have to know that you care about them. There are two people in politics that I think do a wonderful job of that, and I don't care whether you support either one of them. One is Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio was raised by a woman that cleaned other people's hotel rooms. But she had hope. She had hope that her son would have a better life, and now he's in the United States Senate. And the other person who does a wonderful job of communicating hope is a guy named Tim Scott, who is my best friend in politics. And Tim Scott's grandfather, who's now 94, would hold the newspaper up every morning at breakfast. Wanted Timmy to see him reading the newspaper because of the value of education, the power of education. Wanted Timmy to be informed. Wanted him to be up on current events. So he held the newspaper up every single morning. Except he couldn't read. Can't read to this day. But he wanted to communicate hope to his grandson about the power of education. You want to persuade people? Do you speak in hopeful terms? Do you communicate hope? Are they convinced that you have their best interest at mind? So you got a message. You got a manner of communicating. Now all you need is a messenger, right? You're just waiting on whoever that is. Whether it's President Obama, whether it's Ronald Reagan, whether it's Abraham Lincoln, we're just waiting around on that great messenger, right? If you are waiting around for another Ronald Reagan or another Martin Luther King Jr. or another Abraham Lincoln, you are going to have a long, miserable wait. It's not going to happen. If you're waiting on a knight or knightess to ride in on a white horse and change whatever you think ails our country or your school or your community or your family, it's not going to happen. You know who the messenger is? It's you. I work in a town that is named for Washington. I fly into an airport named for Reagan. I pass monuments to Jefferson and Lincoln and King, and every street is named after somebody famous, and there are statues and portraits in every one of the office buildings. I don't even know. They're so famous, I don't even know them. You know what I think about when I fly into Reagan? I think about a guy you've never heard of. You've never heard of him. I was about your age. I was exactly your age. Watching television with my father. February, in the throes of a terribly frigid winter in Washington, and a plane crashes into the 14th Street Bridge. And all the passengers except a half dozen were killed on impact, and those half dozen were in the icy waters of the Potomac River. And I'm watching this on television with my dad. This is before 24-hour news, but it was captivating the country. So you got these people in the icy waters of the Potomac, and you got the whirr of a helicopter coming. And that helicopter lowers a rope ladder into the waters of the Potomac, and it falls into the hands of a man you've never heard of before. If I called his name right now, you don't know him. So he has life in his hands, and he passes it to a stranger. And that person is hoisted to safety, and the helicopter takes her away, and it comes back, and the same scene repeats itself four more times. And every time, he's got his hands on a rope ladder. He is this close to saving his life. And every single time, he passes it to a stranger, not his wife, not his daughter, not his best friend, a stranger. And when the helicopter came back for him, he had succumbed to fatigue and drowned. His name was Arlen Williams. I'm not asking you to be Reagan. I'm not asking you to be Lincoln. I'm just asking you to live a quiet life of conviction and virtue and actually live out what you profess to believe. And if you can do that, you'll be a leader, you'll be persuasive, and your generation will get this country headed back in the direction that you want it to be in.
All right. Listen, you guys, it's about time we have some good leaders that speak clearly and give us a message of hope and tell us that we all can do the difference in the world, and it's all up to us. And it's all the people around you that can be a part of your wonderful world. And just if you handle with care this world. You know, I need you to understand the difference. When you do something with intention, you care, your energy is different than what you do just because you need to. It's like, you know, when you ask your son or your daughter, the little one said, can you come and, you know, take out the trash, and they're not doing it right because they don't feel like, and when they're doing it from, you know, with all they're willing to help, how much difference it makes. And every suggestion of anything simple can change the way we live together. And I know it's not easy. We are in the fight. We're in the middle of a crazy world that everybody needs to get a better job, get a better paid, get this mortgage or her mortgage going, and do the right thing. But before God today, we need to start thinking about each other as about we are the world. We can do it. And I know it's been an incredible roller coaster life. And today's show was not an easy one. too, for who knows why, but sometimes those moments when you get to understand that it's not all automatic. There is a person, there is a life, there is energy, and sometimes we need to roll with it in a different direction on the way it goes. And then things come to place. And I hope and pray for everybody out there that you have a wonderful day, that you have a great day, that your life will be better and your effort will be blessed with wonder. God bless you all. This is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Let's make it worthy. God bless you. Thank you.